Welcome to our coverage of the trial and sentencing of Ghislaine Maxwell, the ex-lover of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. We delve into the details of the trial, exploring the dark secrets behind the glitz and glamour of high society, the testimonies of victims, and Maxwell's role in the exploitation and abuse of vulnerable girls. In a shocking turn of events, a federal jury found Maxwell guilty of operating a sex trafficking ring, ending a decades-long effort to hold her accountable for victimizing dozens of girls. On December 29, 2021, she was indicted on 6 felony counts including trafficking in criminal sexual activity. Ghislaine Maxwell. Counts: sex trafficking of a minor, transportation of a minor with intent to engage in criminal sexual activity. Victim: the secretary would contact me, the interviewer, and say, "Victim, you're free. Can you come? Epstein would like to see you." Quote. To understand the trial and sentencing of Ghislaine Maxwell, we must first delve into the backgrounds of the two central figures in this shocking case, Maxwell and her late boyfriend Jeffrey Epstein. Before their true nature as sexual predators was exposed, Maxwell and Epstein were socialites on both sides of the Atlantic. Ghislaine Maxwell, the youngest of 9 children, Elizabeth and Robert Maxwell, was born in France in 1961 to a wealthy British family. Maxwell grew up in an English mansion and enjoyed a privileged upbringing. Her father, Robert Maxwell, was a media mogul and member of parliament, while her mother, Elizabeth, was a French-born Holocaust survivor. Maxwell received an elite education, attending one of the most exclusive boarding schools in the United Kingdom and later studying at Oxford University as a member of the British High Society. She mixed with some of the country's most famous families and made connections that would shape her future. It was while in the United States, following the death of her father in 1991, that Maxwell met financier Jeffrey Epstein. The exact circumstances of their initial meeting remain unclear, but their relationship soon developed into something more than a simple friendship. A billionaire with a seemingly inexplicable source of income, Jeffrey Epstein led a life of luxury and excess. Epstein owned a private island, private jets, and surrounded himself with personal assistants who catered to his every whim, even cleaning his sex toys. Together they jetted with influential figures such as Bill Clinton, dined with Bill Gates, partied with Donald Trump before he became president, and socialized with the Duke of York, Prince Andrew. Her little black notebooks, which were presented as evidence during her trial, contained the contact details of some of the most powerful and influential people on the planet. However, behind the scenes, Epstein's hidden within the glitz and glamour of their high-profile lives was a dark secret. Maxwell and Epstein used their wealth and privilege to shield themselves from retaliation for their heinous crimes against teenage girls. It all began with an initial police investigation into Epstein over a decade ago in Palm Beach. Unfortunately, this investigation ended in a non-prosecution agreement negotiated by Epstein's high-powered lawyers and Alexander Acosta, the top federal prosecutor in Miami at the time. Acosta would later be forced to resign as Trump's labor secretary after the Miami Herald exposed the circumstances surrounding the agreement. While Maxwell filed a lawsuit in 2020, alleging that Epstein had promised to support her financially during their time together, the nature of their relationship has been the subject of debate. Some have described Maxwell as Epstein's girlfriend, while others have characterized her as his right-hand woman. Regardless of the exact nature of their relationship, it is clear that Maxwell played an important role in Epstein's life. However, their relationship took a dramatic turn after the Epstein's 2008 conviction for soliciting prostitution from a minor. The public scrutiny surrounding Epstein's crimes forced Maxwell and Epstein to distance themselves from each other in the public eye. Maxwell's once prominent position in New York City society began to fade, and she gradually retreated from the public eye. In 2009, Virginia Roberts Chuffrey filed a civil lawsuit against Epstein, accusing him and Maxwell of introducing her into their alleged sex trafficking ring. Although Maxwell remained a fixture in New York City society until 2015, the allegations against her continued to mount. Following Jeffrey Epstein's arrest in 2008, Ghislaine Maxwell's life took a dramatic turn. The once prominent socialite and confidant of Epstein disappeared from the public eye, leaving many wondering about her whereabouts. As the search for Maxwell intensified, the legal bullets she would face began to unfold. During for months, Abogadish and members of the press searched for Maxwell, attempting to uncover his whereabouts and hold him accountable for his alleged involvement in Epstein's crimes. Speculation ran rampant, with rumors suggesting he could be in Brazil, France, or even California. The truth remained elusive. In the summer of 2019, a photograph emerged purportedly showing Maxwell at an In-N-Out Burger in Los Angeles. However, the authenticity of the photo was questioned, adding to the mystery surrounding his whereabouts. Maxwell seemed to have vanished into thin air. Lisa Bryant, director of the Netflix series Jeffrey Epstein, Filthy Rich, commented on the search for Maxwell, stating, "I hear he's in Brazil. I hear he's in France. I hear he's in California. Who really knows where he is?" The uncertainty surrounding Maxwell's location only fueled public interest in his case. It wasn't until July 2020 that the truth about Maxwell's whereabouts was finally revealed. She had been living in the small town of Bradford, New Hampshire, in a four-bedroom, million-dollar home. The discovery of her stash marked a major breakthrough in the search for Maxwell. Maxwell's arrest in July 2020 came as a shock to many. She was charged with multiple counts by the Southern District of New York, including perjury and transportation of a minor for unlawful sexual activity. The legal battles that had been brewing behind the scenes came to the fore. One factor complicating efforts to bring charges against Maxwell was the infamous 2008 plea deal that Epstein had reached with Miami U.S. Attorney Alexander Acosta. The deal, described by Jeffrey Epstein's producer, Joe Berlinger, as an unprecedented sweetheart deal, included a non-prosecution agreement for named and unnamed co-conspirators. The deal posed a challenge to prosecutors seeking to hold Maxwell accountable. Despite legal hurdles, Maxwell's indictment marked a turning point in the pursuit of justice. She was denied bail three times, even after posting a whopping $28.5 million and agreeing to live under armed guard. The severity of the charges against her and the potential risks she posed were deemed too great to grant her release. Since her arrest, Maxwell has been held at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn, a facility known for its harsh conditions. Her detention has been marked by intense media scrutiny and public interest. The world eagerly awaits the outcome of her trial, hoping to obtain answers and justice for the victims of Epstein's alleged crimes. Maxwell's trial, originally scheduled for July 2021, was delayed due to the inclusion of an additional charge of sex trafficking. On April 23, 2021, Maxwell pleaded not guilty to sex trafficking conspiracy and the additional charge. Her attorneys requested a delay in the trial in light of the newly added charges, and on May 11, the judge announced that Maxwell's trial would begin in November 2021. Maxwell was indicted in July 2020, approximately a year after Epstein's death, in a Manhattan jail cell, while awaiting trial on federal charges of sex trafficking, child trafficking, and conspiracy. Throughout the trial, Maxwell's defense team argued that she was nothing more than a scapegoat for Epstein's misdeeds, a target of the wrath of women who believed themselves to be his victims. They portrayed her as a victim unrelated to Epstein's actions and wrongfully held responsible for her relationship with him. However, the prosecution and witnesses painted a very different story. They painted a picture of Maxwell as an active participant in the sexual exploitation, grooming, and abuse of young girls. According to prosecutor Laura Pomeranz, Maxwell preyed on vulnerable young girls, manipulating them and grooming them for sexual abuse. Maxwell was described as the lady of the house, and she and Epstein were portrayed as partners in crime. In Jeffrey Epstein's opulent world, his oceanfront mansion in Palm Beach, Florida, was the epicenter of a disturbing operation that preyed on vulnerable girls. According to court records and testimony, this lavish residence became a hub for the grooming and exploitation of underage girls. And Ghislaine Maxwell played a pivotal role in the sinister process. Situated in the exclusive oceanfront community, Epstein's mansion exuded an air of wealth and privilege. It was within these luxurious walls that the lives of countless young girls would be forever altered. As we delve deeper into the details, it becomes clear that the mansion was not simply a residence, but a carefully orchestrated trap designed to ensnare unsuspecting victims. A Florida detective's testimony reveals the chilling scope of the grooming operation. Approximately 30 women came forward to tell the detective about performing massages and performing jobs at Epstein's mansion. However, it soon became clear that these seemingly innocent activities were a front for something much more sinister. Interviewer, when you think of her now, you use the phrase, you said the recruiter. You felt like she was the victim or the interviewer was looking for someone for him. Victim, oh, 100% yes. Ghislaine Maxwell played a crucial role in the recruitment process. According to the detective's testimony, Maxwell was directly involved in luring young women into Epstein's exploitative web. Her presence and influence within the mansion created an environment in which vulnerable girls were lured and manipulated. It's important to note that the majority of these girls were under the age of 18, and only two had prior massage experience. This raises troubling questions about how Epstein was able to access such a large number of underage victims. The detective's testimony offers a chilling answer. Each victim who entered the mansion was asked to bring their friends, furthering Epstein's network of exploitation. Victim, she was 14 years old. What the hell do you know when you're that young? But what motivated these girls to comply with Maxwell's recruitment efforts? Some were lured with promises of financial compensation, while others may have been coerced or manipulated through various means. The details surrounding the methods Maxwell employed to lure these girls are deeply disturbing and will be explored further in the following sections. As the investigation into the dark world of Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein continued, it became clear that the oceanfront mansion served as a breeding ground for exploitation. The allure of wealth, power, and privilege masked the horrors unfolding within its walls. It's time to delve deeper into the tactics Maxwell employed to manipulate and control these young women, ensuring a steady supply of victims for Epstein's twisted desires. Court documents and testimony shed light on the methods Maxwell used to lure, manipulate, and control these young women. One of the most chilling aspects of his tactics was the exploitation of trust. Maxwell would often befriend victims, gaining their trust and luring them into a false sense of security. This manipulation allowed him to exploit their vulnerabilities and ensure their compliance. In some cases, Maxwell would prey on the dreams and aspirations of these young women. He would promise them opportunities in modeling or acting and offer them the prospect of a glamorous future. This manipulation of their hopes and dreams made it easier for Maxwell to exert control over them. Victim. She was like, I know someone who was a father figure to me. I think it's a blessing that you knew me because I could help you in so many ways. And on top of that, she knows a lot of people in the acting industry. Another tactic Maxwell employed was isolation. Once girls were caught in Epstein's web, they often found themselves cut off from their support systems. Maxwell made sure to cut them off from their families and friends, leaving them vulnerable and dependent on Epstein and herself. This isolation made it difficult for victims to seek help or escape the clutches of their abusers. Financial incentives were also used to maintain control over victims. Some girls were paid for their participation in Epstein's activities, creating a sense of dependency on the money provided. This financial control further reinforced the power dynamic between Maxwell, Epstein, and the victims, making it harder for the girls to break free from his grasp. Coercion and intimidation were also prevalent in Maxwell's tactics. Victims were often subjected to threats or scare tactics to ensure their silence and compliance. they were led to believe that speaking out or seeking help would have dire consequences for them and their loved ones. This atmosphere of fear and intimidation kept victims trapped in a cycle of abuse. It is important to note that Maxwell's role in the grooming process went beyond mere manipulation. She actively participated in the exploitation of these young women, often being present during sexual encounters with Epstein. This level of involvement further cemented her control over the victims and reinforced the power dynamics within the operation. The scandal surrounding Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Stein extends far beyond their twisted world. Court filings and media reports have implicated prominent figures such as Prince Andrew and former President Bill Clinton in their alleged connections to the exploitation and abuse of young girls. In this section, we delve into the legal proceedings and the involvement of these individuals, shedding light on the web of connections surrounding Maxwell and Epstein. Virginia, that first time in London, I was so young, Ghislaine. She woke me up in the morning and said, "Today you're going to meet a prince." I didn't know at the time that I was going to be trafficked to that prince, Prince Andrew. The Duke of York has been the center of numerous allegations about his association with Epstein and Maxwell. One of the most damning claims against him is that he sexually abused a minor in London, New York, and even on Epstein's private island in the Virgin Islands. Virginia, we leave the Trump Club and I get in the car with Ghislaine and Jeffrey, and Ghislaine says she's going back to the house and I want you to do for him what you do for Epstein. According to the accuser, she was instructed to engage in sexual acts with Prince Andrew by Ghislaine Maxwell herself. These allegations have been vehemently denied by the Duke of York, but they have cast a dark shadow over his reputation. Former President Bill Clinton's connection to Epstein and Maxwell has also come under scrutiny. While Clinton has acknowledged being an associate of Epstein and flying on his private jet for humanitarian trips, she has denied any wrongdoing or knowledge of Epstein's crimes. However, court records and media reports suggest that Clinton may have more information about Maxwell and Epstein's activities due to the extensive travel she took with them. The nature of Clinton's involvement remains a subject of speculation and investigation. It is important to note that the inclusion of these figures in court records and media reports does not necessarily imply their guilt or direct involvement. They are mentioned in passing in various court proceedings in Epstein's crimes, and their inclusion does not automatically suggest Epstein-related crimes. However, their alleged connections to Maxwell and Epstein have added another layer of intrigue and controversy to an already scandalous scandal. Court documents unsealed during the trial reference more than 150 high-profile individuals named in Epstein accuser Virginia Jeffrey's defamation case against Maxwell. These individuals are part of multiple legal proceedings, and their inclusion does not necessarily imply their direct involvement in Epstein's crimes. The latest batch of court documents also includes allegations by Virginia Dufra, formerly known as Jane DeMetro III, that Epstein trafficked her for numerous other powerful men, including numerous prominent U.S. politicians, high-ranking corporate executives, foreign presidents, a prominent prime minister, and other world leaders. These claims have gripped the public, raising questions about the scope of Epstein's network and the potential involvement of influential figures. The jury heard testimony from four alleged victims, three of whom testified using pseudonyms or only their first names. These victims recounted their encounters with Epstein and Maxwell when they were young teenagers, often during times of financial hardship or when they had a single or sick parent. Maxwell, with her sophisticated British accent and elegant demeanor, befriended these vulnerable girls and lured them into situations where Epstein could take advantage of them. With Maxwell's help, prosecutors alleged that Epstein sexually abused these girls, rewarding them with cash and manipulating them into recruiting others to make even more money. One victim, known as Jane, recounted her harrowing experience visiting Epstein's Palm Beach estate when she was 14. Epstein and Maxwell would buy her gifts, take her shopping, and ultimately sexually abuse her. Another victim, known as Kate, testified that Maxwell promised to help her with her music career but instead became the victim of Epstein's sexual encounters. The testimonies from these victims were chilling and heartbreaking. They described instances of abuse, manipulation, and coercion at the hands of both Epstein and Maxwell. The victims were subjected to massages that escalated into sexual encounters in which Maxwell sometimes participated and touched their bodies. The abuse extended beyond Epstein's Palm Beach estate, as he and Maxwell flew the victims on their private jets to their homes in New York City and Santa Fe, New Mexico, where the abuse continued. Prosecutors emphasized that Epstein's extreme wealth played a significant role in luring these vulnerable girls back to him. In the case of one victim, Epstein paid for her tuition at a private high school and even funded her mother's New York City apartment. Prosecutors argued that Maxwell was not an innocent bystander but an active participant in these crimes, using her position of power and influence to facilitate Epstein's abuse. As the trial unfolded, the defense attempted to undermine the credibility of witnesses, suggesting that their testimony was influenced by faulty memories, manipulation, and financial incentives. They referred to a victim's compensation fund that awarded millions to those abused by Epstein, including witnesses who testified against Maxwell. The defense called a few witnesses, but their testimony did little to refute the victims' accounts. One defense witness, Elizabeth Loftus, a professor who specializes in the study of false memories, attempted to cast doubt on the reliability of victims' memories. However, her testimony, which came at a hefty rate of $600 an hour, barely swayed the jury. In the end, Maxwell's defense team maintained her ignorance and innocence, arguing that she should not be punished for her relationship with Epstein. They portrayed her as a victim of circumstance, a woman who made the mistake of associating with Epstein but who committed no crime. However, the prosecution disputed these claims, stating that Maxwell made her own decisions and actively participated in Epstein's crimes. They emphasized that she was a grown woman who knew exactly what she was doing and that she should be held accountable for breaking the law. At the conclusion of the trial, the jury found Ghislaine Maxwell guilty on 5 of the 6 counts against her. The verdict marks a significant step toward justice for the victims and a long-awaited reckoning for Maxwell and Epstein's crimes. Maxwell now faces the possibility of spending decades in prison. As Ghislaine Maxwell's trial drew to a close, the defense presented its case with the aim of challenging the prosecution's arguments and establishing Maxwell's innocence. They presented her as a scapegoat, a target for the anger of women who believed they were victims of Epstein. Maxwell's attorney, Bobby Sternheim, argued that she was being unfairly held responsible for Epstein's misdeeds, emphasizing that she was a victim of circumstance rather than an active participant in the crimes. Sternheim told jurors that Maxwell was a target of anger for women who believed themselves to be Epstein's victims. He portrayed Maxwell as a scapegoat for a man who behaved badly, suggesting that the criminal case against her was a desperate effort by prosecutors to make up for the loss of their primary target, Epstein. In her closing argument, Assistant District Attorney Laura Pomerantz painted a very different picture. She reminded jurors of the testimony they had heard, of stories of exploitation, grooming, and sexual abuse at the hands of Maxwell herself. Pomerantz argued that Maxwell was not an innocent bystander but an active participant in Epstein's crimes. She described Maxwell as the mistress of the house, claiming that she preyed on vulnerable young girls, manipulating them and grooming them for sexual abuse. The jury had to weigh the evidence presented by both sides and determine Maxwell's fate. After careful deliberation, they reached a verdict. Ghislaine Maxwell was found guilty on 5 of the 6 counts against her, including sex trafficking of minors and conspiracy to commit sex trafficking. The verdict marked a significant victory for the prosecution and a long-awaited moment of justice for the victims. Maxwell now faces the possibility of spending decades in prison. The sentencing phase of the trial will determine the length of her sentence, taking into account several factors, including the seriousness of the crimes and any mitigating circumstances presented by the defense. The outcome of the sentencing will be closely watched by the public, as it will serve as a gauge of how the justice system responds to those who enable and participate in the abuse of vulnerable individuals. Prosecutors had asked the judge to sentence Maxwell to 30 to 55 years in prison, while the probation department recommended 20 years. Maxwell's attorneys had sought a more lenient sentence of 4 to 5 years in prison. Judge Allison Nathan estimated that the sentencing guidelines called for 15.5 to 19.5 years in prison. However, she handed down a sentence slightly above that range, citing the disturbing testimony of victims and Maxwell's direct and repeated involvement in a horrific scheme. Ms. Maxwell is not being punished in Epstein's stead, she said. Ms. Maxwell is being punished for the role she played. Today's sentencing will seek to acknowledge the harm that Ms. Maxwell has caused, Nathan said. The 20-year sentence marks a pivotal moment in a decades-long international sex trafficking case that exemplified the ways in which the rich and powerful can avoid or at least delay the consequences of their actions. Maxwell was also sentenced to 5 years of probation and ordered to pay a $50,000 fine that her lawyer said she could not afford. The judge said she will be sent to federal prison in Dunbury, Connecticut. Ghislaine Maxwell, sentenced to 20 years in prison, 5 years of probation. $750,000 fine. If you enjoyed this video, check out our other awesome videos on the channel. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time. M.